You're listening to the Screaming Pods Network.
Welcome to another episode of Just the Disc. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. I have a guest returning who hasn't been on the show for some time. And that is my wife, Lisa. Hi.
Hello.
So we have kind of a special show I've been wanting to do for a long time. And it sort of blossomed into an even bigger show, which will also be fun. And the initial impetus was to cover the Blu-ray of Valley Girl that Shout Select put out late last year, because this movie means a whole lot to my wife and I, and we'll get into that. But in addition to that, we are also going to go through some of her favorite movies that are available on Blu-ray as sort of a kind of Valentine's Day-ish episode. I got a serious eye roll there. Neither of us are really big Valentine's Day people, right?
Sure.
What do you mean, sure? You are and you just holding out?
No, I'm not actually.
Okay. But anyway, I thought it'd be...
You should show your love every day, not just on Valentine's Day.
I agree. And I try.
No, just kidding.
Okay, so first let's start with Valley Girl. Classic film from the 80s. One of the great romantic films of that period.
Okay, so he's awesome.
Valley Girl.
She's out there somewhere.
This is the story of a boy from Hollywood who never dreamed the girl he'd want most was down here.
I'll stop the world.
Hello.
Hello. Who invited you?
Oh, wow, you mean you have to be invited? That explains it.
What?
Well, everyone is dressed weird. See, if I had been invited, I would have known this was a costume party.
Right.
It's the story of a girl from the valley who never dreamed she'd ever be seen with a boy from over here.
It's like I'm not getting out of this car.
All right, but when they attack the car, save the radio.
What is your history with the movie, Lisa? When was the first time you saw it? Do you remember?
Well, Brian.
Don't do that.
And for those of you who don't know, Brian doesn't like when I call him Brian.
Not at all.
But I felt compelled since he called me Lisa, which he doesn't usually do. My first contact with the film was in the theater. And
when it came out?
When it came out, yeah. I didn't go to...
Did you see it at the Galleria?
Eesh. I do not know. What year is it?
83, I think, or 82.
Oh, I would probably have most definitely seen 83. It at... Yeah, I would have probably most definitely seen it in the Galleria, yeah.
Well, we should mention just as a brief aside before we get into it is that you... Grew up in the valley. You're a valley girl.
Oh, my God.
So authentic.
That was pretty terrible, but that's okay.
No, it was great. And I proposed to you on a original one sheet for the movie because of where you came from and because the movie is special to us. But do you remember when you saw it, was it exciting because you already lived in the valley and you're like, oh, a movie about where I live? Or do you have any memories of the circumstances surrounding it?
Wow. I don't remember that much. And sadly, I'm sure your listeners have heard this me tell this before, unless you got rid of me telling you this in the past, that I sort of have a memory of a goldfish when it comes to movies or a lot
sometimes,
of things.
But sometimes.
A lot of things, I guess. Yeah, no, you're right. Sometimes, like if something... hit me really hard. I may remember that I liked it, but I won't remember every intricate detail. Like I won't be one of those people who recites lines back to you and stuff like that. I may try, but get it completely wrong. And then it's pretty embarrassing and kind of sadly humorous, maybe. I don't know. But I do remember liking the song Melt With You.
It's one of the great falling in love montages ever. I've said it before.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think. I feel like I knew the song before the movie. Modern English. I think that was something that was played. I didn't listen to the radio a lot, but the little bit
Rodney
of
on the Rock.
Yeah, the little bit of radio that I did listen to, I feel like Modern English was something that I heard before the movie, but I could be wrong.
Did you remember thinking that's a realistic portrayal of the valley versus Hollywood? I mean, for those that don't know, real quick, the story is of a Hollywood guy played by Nick Cage who goes to a party in the valley and sees a girl played by Deborah Foreman the Valley girl in question, and they sort of fall for each other, and it becomes a sort of Romeo and Juliet kind of scenario. It's very much that template. But anyway, did you find it to be an interesting slash realistic representation of Hollywood versus the Valley? Was Hollywood versus the Valley a thing even?
I don't remember that being a thing that I knew of, but again, I was pretty young. I do know that, and maybe this is something that we've talked about before, maybe this is a sad spoiler for you, that I used to love the city. And I used to go into the city, and whenever it was my turn to drive with my friends, and obviously this was after Valley Girl because I wasn't driving at that age, I would be the one who always took my friends up into the city, and we'd take Ventura Boulevard as it and past Dupars every time. And then we'd go all the way down, you know, into through Studio City, you know, on Highland Avenue, all the way into Hollywood. And because I wasn't allowed to, or never really learned at that point, maybe to drive on the freeway very much, except for weird road trips, but that's an aside. Anyway.
Well, it's easier to take surface streets to the Hollywood from the Valley, isn't it? Horse of peace, I guess.
No, yeah, I think it just depends. But anyways, so I used to love to go into the city. So I would have probably been, even though I'm technically a Valley girl, I would have probably been more on the side of Nick Cage's people.
Where do you live?
Hollywood. I go to Hollywood High.
Me too.
Oh my God. Like, don't you have a straw? Totally out of touch with civilization.
This is what we call living on the edge.
You don't have places like this in the Valley, do you?
No, we're just not into loving it.
So what do you do over there that's hot?
We go to normal parties, go to normal places, we buy nice new clothes.
It's no different from what we do. It's the way we do things that makes the difference.
You know, like these guys all look sick or something. You know, I would help you with a tan.
You won't catch anything here. This is the real world. It's not fresh and clean like a television show.
I always thought the Valley was real enough for me. Do you think they could crank this noise up a little louder?
Noise? Noise? This music's got emotion, power. That techno rock you guys listen to is gutless.
I'm sure. Fran, that's my leg. You guys think you're so different, don't you?
We are. We're ourselves.
Oh, and we're not?
You're like her. And all the rest of her friends, you're all fucking programmed.
So what does it take to be so free?
That's a good question. So when can I see you again? Thank you.
Really, Randy? Why don't you wait until the end of the evening to say these things?
Any questions?
It's the way I feel. It's what I want. Good.
All right, I'm going to play this song. It's called A Million Miles Away.
I'm here with you now.
I know.
But yeah.
I think that's what I like about you. You're a Hollywood girl in the Valley, kind of.
It's not that you hold me tight.
I like that too. Well, that's cool. So were you struck right away by Nick Cage? Do you remember liking him? Was this ground zero for your fandom of Nick Cage? I know you and I are both fans. Don't make fun of that.
You know, I was never really quite aware of like particular actors, I don't think, like following them, I think, at the time, or even necessarily till I was a little bit older, which when we talk about some of the movies that I like. But I did think it was very romantic, and I always love, I still do, right? Love that kind of unrealistic romance story, you know. But again, it's Romeo and Juliet, which is a lot like another movie that we're going to talk about later, which isn't Romeo and Juliet, but it's also Shakespearean.
Very much, yeah. No, there's something neat about an 80s movie riffing on that structure, directed by a woman. And Martha Coolidge, by the way, one of my favorite directors of all time, between Valley Girl and Real Genius, she really wouldn't have to make anything else as far as I'm concerned. But
it's funny because I don't know if this is like a weird aside, I guess, but like whenever I would see Valley Girl, every time I'd see the dad, whose name I do not know.
Fred Forrest.
Yes, Fred Forrest. Always made me think of Sonny Bono. And I used to like really be into Sonny and Cher show. And every time, nonstop, it takes me a while. Like, I still see Sonny Bono and not Mr. Forrester. Is that his name? What'd you say?
Frederick Forrest.
Forrest, my bad.
One of the things I like about the movie that I find intriguing is the parents and the differences between the parents. Although the Valley parents you don't see quite as much of, and they're definitely portrayed in a slightly...
hippie-ish.
Well, no, that's the... Oh, yeah, they are the Valley parents. I was thinking of the other Valley parents. I was thinking of her friend's parents.
Oh, right.
Lee Purcell, the mom, has a whole...
Right, right.
There's a whole thing I won't give away there. But anyway, that group is different. But yeah, Deborah Foreman's parents are hippies, and they're played by Fred Forrest and Colleen Camp.
Julie, is that you?
Yeah, Mom, it's me. Sorry.
We have been worried sick about you. Where have you been that you'd have to stay out all night?
Wait, I don't think I want to hear this.
No, honey, we have no secrets in this family. Julie, we know you're at an age now where boys are more important and nature plays its little part in the scheme of life. What am I talking about? I'm sure...
Get serious! I was out all night, but I didn't...
Wait a minute, Julie, listen. What your father is trying to say, dear, is whatever you do is all right with us as long as it doesn't hurt you or anyone else.
Right.
Wait, Mom, I just...
You see, we just want you to be careful and responsible. I mean, your mother and I worry about you, honey. It's not fair with all the creepy crawlers out there and everything.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to bed. Wait a minute, Julie.
You know, Julie, we were young once. Your mother still is. We understand.
This isn't the age of Aquarius, you know.
Yeah, what did it were?
God, why don't you just punish me like Stacy's parents do? Bad karma, dear.
They run a health food restaurant kind of
and
place.
And store, restaurant store.
Yeah, it's a little bit like...
Follow Your Heart.
Yeah, a place that we love in the Valley called Follow Your Heart, which we've been going to since we've been together, but you've been going to since when?
Over 20 years.
Yeah, I think that's another reason the movie is special, is because Follow Your Heart has...
Actually, over 30 years. Ouch.
Follow Your Heart is a really nice vegan restaurant / grocery store in Sherman Oaks, California, in the Valley. And it is Sherman Oaks, right?
It's Canoga Park.
Canoga Park, that's right. And so I think that's another thing that I connect to in the movie is that I've always liked the movie, but since we've been together, I've liked it more, and I think that that is part of it. I think this vegan, you know, hippie thing, not that I would ever call you a hippie, although I think your students have definitely called you that.
People have said that.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know. There's just something about it that's really, it really gets me every time. I don't know. I still love it, and we've watched it together a bunch since we've... Did I try to show Raven and we didn't get all the way through it? Or
I feel like we showed it to her. I thought we did. And in fact, I'm pretty sure we did. And I remember that she wanted to see it because of the poster. And she sees the poster around because the poster used to be hanging up in our bedroom. And then we repainted everything and never put everything back. And it's downstairs now. And she sees it. And then she always makes comments about the tagline and keeps trying to change it and
tell
us stuff.
What's the tagline again? It's like...
She's from cool. the valley.
No, it's like, she's cool, he's hot. Hot.
She's from the valley, he's not.
Exactly. And she likes to switch around the he and the she. But it is definitely something she's aware of. I don't know that too many kids her age are aware of the tagline of the Valley Girl poster. But like I said, big deal in our house. Anyway, this Blu-ray is super nice. It's got a whole bunch of stuff ported over from the DVD, which is like... interviews with Nicolas Cage we were watching with him and the director. I thought those were cool. I like Nicolas Cage interviews. I don't know why. There's just something funny about him talking, especially at that age when he's sort of looking...
I love what he's wearing in the interview too. That's the best.
It's a killer jacket. He's almost always the master of jackets in any picture I've ever seen.
He looks very Hollywood-esque, almost like conjuring up his, you know, character.
Yeah.
Like what he would be like 20 years later when was that? It was 20 years anniversary, or was it?
I think it was 20. Yeah, so I want to say it was circa 2003, something like that. But that's so interesting you say that. I hadn't thought about it. It could be, and he is the kind of actor that would go, what would my character be wearing now? And you see him now and he's got these like tinted, like I think they're blue tinted glasses that he's wearing through the whole interview. But it's great because he really does have fond memories of the movie and does realize its importance in popular culture and in his career.
It's sort of like there's a famous saying that thinking destroys knowing. I think it was William Morton who wrote Birdie said that. And in that case, on the set, I wasn't thinking, I was just feeling. Randy, I think, was me. I mean, at that time in my life, I wasn't a rock and roller or a new waver or any of that, but I was certainly an outcast in my high school environment. I had trouble fitting in to different social groups, so I didn't really belong to anything in particular.
And I think that's another thing that endears me to him is the idea that he's like still remembers those early stages. And, you know, if not for this movie, who knows what happens? I mean, I'm sure he gets into acting anyway. I mean, he obviously had some roles prior to this, smaller ones, but this is really the one that you're just like, oh, okay. Because it's so romantic the way that he talks to her. Like when he goes to the party, I still, that line about, you know.
Well, to tell you the truth, I kind of thought that maybe you and I could,
We could what?
We could get out of here.
Like, I don't think you'd be any more welcome down there right now.
I mean, let's leave the party.
I'm so sure.
Kill. I'll meet you out front.
Wait a minute. Where are we gonna go?
I don't care.
What are we gonna do?
Anything.
You know, like that whole bit, I just love it. I just think it's so charming and just, I don't know. So it's just a really romantic movie, and I like to think about romantic movies when I think about my wife, so that's part of the reason that it stuck with us. But yeah, there's a lot of locations. We've been to the Dupars restaurant in the movie, haven't we? I thought we went once.
Oh, I don't remember going with you, but...
I didn't go with somebody else.
Well, no, I don't remember. I don't remember.
Maybe we've only ever just talked about going to it.
And I've said
how the food is just okay at Dupars, if we're being honest.
Well, it's not just that. It's just that it's not anything that I would probably eat these days. I don't know. But again, I haven't been there. Yeah, I haven't been there since the 80s.
Yeah. Well, it's cool that it's still there. And I think in the same location, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's the same one. Yeah.
Yeah.
On Ventura Boulevard off of Laurel Canyon.
Nice. Well, anyway, just let me run down this Blu-ray real quick, and then we'll talk about some other stuff. So it's got those interviews with Nick Cage and the director. It's got a new Valley Girl in Conversation featuring Martha Coolidge and actress E.G. Daly and Heidi Holliker. They play two of the Valley Girl friends to Martha to Deborah Foreman.
And Holly talks about how she really was a Valley Girl.
She does. Good memory. Yeah, she, I believe, is the only actual Valley kid in the cast.
Correct.
Everybody else, I want to say E.G. Daly might be from Hollywood, or was she even not even from California? I can't remember now, but she's a great Valley. I love E.G. Daly, and she's a great Valley girl. She's actually in some of my all-time favorite movies, like between this and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. She's got a smaller part in Dogfight, which I really like. Have we watched Dogfight recently? We should watch Dogfight. That doesn't have a Blu-ray, but... There's also, so that conversation is cool. There's this really fun feature called Greetings from the Valley, a history of the San Fernando Valley with Tommy Gelinas. I'm sure I mispronounced
either
that.
Either way,
poor guy.
That sounds bad.
Anyway, but that's cool because it kind of shows literally like from the very beginning what the valley, how it developed. And I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing that, yeah.
Yeah, especially because you grew up there and everything. It was just neat to see it like way back. You know, and vintage pictures and, you know, talking about popular culture and things in the valley. And I don't know, that was really nice. And I thought that was cool.
And how it all came about. I loved how they talk about, no spoilers, I guess, but how they talked about Hollywood and why it had to do with like Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball they were talking about. I felt like they talked about that in there. And they talked about like people from Hollywood wanting a place to live that was close enough to the studios, but still... didn't they talk about that?
Yeah, I think that was, Hollywood was definitely part of the impetus. So that's fun. There is some new storyboard to film comparisons. There's the audio commentary with Martha Coolidge, which I think is from the original DVD, which is great.
In fact, prior to Nick Cage getting his part, I wanted to hire Judd Nelson and Eric Stoltz, but Judd had been booked, and I then kept looking and found Nick Cage and Cameron Dye. It's actually a very funny story. I had walked over to the reject pile of the pictures and resumes that was sitting on a desk, and I said, please, don't bring me any more pretty boys. Bring me somebody who looks like this. And I picked up the picture on the top of the casting person's reject pile, and I held it up, and it was Nick Cage. So the next day, she brought in Nicolas Cage, and he was perfect, perfect for the part. I loved him, and the producers were a little worried and said, yeah, but is he sexy enough? And the casting person and I looked at each other and said, well, we think so. And so I had him come back to read again with Debbie. Well, he wasn't sure if he could take the part because he was shooting Rumblefish at the time for Francis Coppola. And I said, yes, but Francis Coppola is a friend of mine. He's like family to me. He won't want to hurt my film, and he won't want to hurt you. I'm sure we can schedule around you doing some pickup shots for Rumblefish. I'll just give them a call. And he gave me the strangest look. And when I called up the production manager for Rumblefish, he gave me a really hard time for a while and finally said, well, we don't have a Nicolas Cage in this film. And I knew something was up. And I said, well, who do you have? And he said, Nicolas Coppola. And that's how I found out that Nick was related to Francis, and Francis indeed thought that was a very funny story since I'd known them all so well.
Commentaries are really cool in that I don't feel cheated if you're porting over from a DVD, because I'm always like, what else would the director have to say now? It doesn't really feel like, it feels like the first time is going to be the best time. You don't really want to have them try and redo it again necessarily, you know? So that's a good track. Original music videos from Modern English and the Plimsolls, and obviously the Plimsolls are all, this movie is the first time I'd ever heard of them. They play the pivotal song, Million Miles Away, and some others. Do you like the Plimsolls?
In the movie.
And then there's a whole bunch of other making of featurettes and interviews with the cast and crew. It's a really nicely loaded disc. It basically brings over all the stuff from that DVD and adds a few new things. And the transfer is new. This is just a long time coming.
It's a new cover.
It's a new cover. No comment on how you feel about that cover. But I like the new cover, actually. Of course, you can always reverse the artwork inside. I know a lot of collectors like to, they'll flip the artwork over. Because, see, you have the original artwork there. So they'll flip it over, and then they'll have just the slipcase be the outer cover, and then the real art stays on the inside.
Do they always cover a Blu-ray? They make a new cover every time?
Not always, but it's just kind of one of those special things that a lot of these boutiques try to do is commission new artwork, starting with Criterion, Shout Factory, Barrow Video.
Well, the thing that I didn't like about the old cover that I like better on this cover is that it actually looks like Deborah Foreman, and she's got her cute little dimple and everything.
Did we ever figure out, like, the poster is one thing that's kind of a mystery, because the girl on the poster looks nothing like anyone in the movie.
No,
so I don't know if, and I was, there may be something in one of the special features that addresses it, but since it's not something that's in the movie, it's not necessarily something that would come up, but it seems like a case of like, oh, we had a poster design set up maybe before we cast Deborah Foreman and we just couldn't afford to do a different one. I think it's fine, but it would be nice to have her represented on the poster. That is a bit of a bummer. Anyway, any final thoughts on Valley Girl? No. No? Okay.
It's tubular.
So for the rest of the episode, we're going to talk about some of your favorite movies that are on Blu-ray. And we have an additional group that while we were looking at your list yesterday, you realized that there are a handful that are not on Blu-ray. And
so anybody out there who wants to put these on Blu-ray, there you go.
There you go. Anybody listening that might already have these in the kitty, that'd be great. But if not, they're definitely worthy of Blu-rays. But I'd love to cover all of them to give a sort of rounded sense of some of your favorites. So let's start with a little movie from 1991.
Oh, are you talking about Silence of the Lambs?
A rookie FBI agent.
Found a girl's body down in West Virginia.
Are you saying that he's killed again?
I'll help you catch him, Clarice.
A psychiatrist turned psychopath.
Yes, and now, Clarice, poor little Catherine is waiting.
Opposites with one attraction.
Tell me his name, doctor.
Now.
Lecter's missing hand arm.
Her life hangs in the balance.
Man's a raving maniac. Who knows what he'll do?
The Silence of the Lambs. Rated R.
I am talking about Silence of the Lambs.
See, what you people out there, huh? I feel like I'm on a CB radio here. What your listeners need to understand is that unlike you, and unlike a lot of people who have better memories about facts and timelines, I have no idea the dates of when movies are. And I kind of know like about how old I was, but that could be plus or minus 5 years. So that's really not very good statistical data. But anyways, Silence of the Lambs. Love it. Why? Do you want to know?
Yes, I do.
I've always, now this may be a dark reason why I love it, or maybe a weird reason why I love it.
Dark reasons are sometimes the best reason.
But I've always wanted to be so intelligent that I'm mad.
Quid pro quo. I tell you things, you tell me things. Not about this case, though. About yourself. Quid pro quo. Yes or no? Yes or no, Clarice? Poor little Catherine is waiting.
Go, doctor.
What is your worst memory of childhood?
Death of my father.
Tell me about it and don't lie, or I'll know.
He was a town marshal, and one night he surprised two burglars coming out of the back of a drugstore. They shot him.
Was he killed outright?
No, he was very strong. He lasted more than a month. My mother died when I was very young, so my father had become the whole world to me. And when he left me, I had nothing. I was 10 years old.
You're very frank, Clarice. I think it would be quite something to know you in private life.
Quid pro quo, doctor.
So you relate to Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, hell
more
yeah.
More than Jodie Foster.
Oh, yes.
Movie.
Oh, yes.
So you never wanted to be an FBI.
No.
No. You want to be a serial killer.
Well, I don't want to eat people. And no. I know. I'm definitely not saying I want to be a serial killer. Delayed reaction. No, I just love Hannibal Lecter's mind and the good side of it. The fact that he, I know it sounds kind of creepy. It's almost like this is not how I would be, I guess. But you always hear about, you know, crazy people getting fans when they're in jail. And it's definitely not like
Charles
that.
Manson effect or something?
Or yes. And all the, I don't know about that. I just mean like tons of people. I remember when I was younger, maybe I shouldn't give them fame by saying the name. But at one point when I was a teenager in the Valley, there was a killer on the loose. And I was babysitting, and I remember being very scared thinking about this. But there would be people who would write him letters and go to his court cases and see him in.
Was it the Hollywood Strangler?
No, it's not. And so I'm not, again,
okay, don't
I don't
want
to give wanna, I don't want to give something for to a serial killer. I don't think they deserve the extra attention.
It's all good.
But and so that's not exactly what I'm talking about with Hannibal Lecter. What I'm saying is I feel like I can understand the other side of his mind. Like I can understand the side of his mind, like maybe if his life had a little different trajectory versus serial killing, then he would be someone that I would want to be.
Okay. No, I get it. He is one of the most...
As Brian's hitting delete right now. Who did I marry?
No, I get it. He is one of the most intelligent characters that, at least to that point, I had ever seen in a movie. You just get a sense of like the madness of him as well as the off the charts intelligence that he has.
And he understands people so well. Like he and obviously that's part of what the movie's about. Like he understands the person who is trying to go through the transformation and how he understands what places to go to and what things he might be doing. Because clearly he's a psychologist. And so he has that background. But I feel like they always say that people who study that are really have their own problems. And so maybe he was trying to understand himself. I don't know. But I do love Hannibal Lecter.
He's pretty great. What about Jodie Foster? You like her?
No, I mean, I think she's a great actress. I love her in that movie, I mean,
it's
of course.
One of her best performances.
And it does. I mean,
next to Freaky Friday.
Just kidding. But there is definitely. I mean, it makes you want to be that person who can solve the case and stuff. And I love how she, you know, their minds meld, right? And
well, and that she's sort of has the courage to just get in there with him and know that it's dangerous and. I don't know how much she gets off on it or not, but regardless, it's a thing where she's not afraid.
Well, the cool thing, right, my interpretation is that they see themselves in each other, and that's why he lets her live.
Yeah.
Because he could have killed her.
Yeah.
And I love that also, you know, that I get that.
Absolutely. No, it's a great film. It's got, speaking of Blu-rays, it's got a nice Criterion Collection Blu-ray. Have you ever heard the commentary? You should listen to that.
No, sometime. I have not heard
it's
the commentary.
It's a really good commentary. It goes back to...
Manhunter?
Well, no, it just goes back to the DVD, which is one of the original Criterion Collection DVDs, which then went out of print. So it kind of lived in limbo in terms of the special features for a long time until just last year, I think, it finally came out from Criterion. So that's the first. Next up, we have one from 1977.
That
and it's this... not Star Wars.
Well, I almost feel like Tarantino here, where he talks, or at least the times I've heard him talk about how his mom used to take him. Wait, I'll get there. About how his mom used to take him to see movies and maybe and allow him to see movies when he was at a young age, and maybe not all that were appropriate. And maybe that's my interpretation of what I've heard him say.
Yeah,
maybe
definitely.
I'm getting that wrong. And I feel like my mom and his mom would be friends. Basically, I saw Saturday Night Fever when I was young, very young. And
we'll say less than 10 years old.
Oh, yes, for sure.
You don't have to give away your exact age, but less than 10.
Yes, definitely. Yes. But I have fond memories of it, and I love that movie.
The only time somebody told me I was good in my life, two, twice. It's Raised Today and Dance at the Disco.
His name is Tony Manero. Every guy wants to dance like him.
He's very good, huh?
He's the best.
Hey, man, he's great.
Every girl wants to be with him. John Travolta is Tony Manero in Saturday Night Fever. Catch it. Rated R.
And at the time, I didn't get that there was a lot of things that, like, I didn't get there was a rape scene in that movie. I don't know if I really realized how deep it was. Like,
or
I know
how dark it was.
Well, it's dark, but it's also really deep. And I like it a lot now, having rewatched it many times. The last time, I think, it affected me the most because I finally understood the complexity of it. Obviously, when I was a little kid, I didn't get what was going on. I liked the music. I remember my mom, one thing she would do is if there was music for a movie, she would buy me the album. And I definitely had the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, still do. It's a little scratched up from the cat.
Is it the same one?
Oh, yeah. Same one.
So the Bee Gees were big when you were a kid for you.
Bee Gees were, you know, here's the thing. She bought me movie soundtracks more than she bought me albums. So I had a Olivia Newton-John album or two, and I
Did
had
she
a,
take you to Xanadu? We've never asked.
No, and I
that
had
would, that would have been just about.
Yeah, and I had a Donna Summer record or two, and I had a Sister Sledge record.
Your mom bought you all those?
Yes.
Okay.
But everything else was a movie soundtrack, and
I like your mom's.
So
style.
You know, I remember the first time a separate John Travolta movie, and have you discovered that you think my mom had a thing for John Travolta? Because I saw a lot of John Travolta movies. But again, he was famous during that time, so you may have an argument there.
And certainly was one of the biggest movie stars like ever, like. The 70s was the era of, I mean, obviously there's the Hollywood movie star type, and then there's, you know, you start to move into the 70s where you had Burt Reynolds and John Travolta were mega stars, huge. I mean, they could open a movie like nobody even today. I don't think that's something people can understand as much, because I feel like we cycle through actors a little more quickly now, and they don't burn quite as hot as Travolta did. But your mom definitely, because you went to Grease, you went to Urban Cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I can't blame her. He's a handsome lad.
No, he's a handsome dude. And John Travolta, if you're out there listening, you should. I feel like I'm related to you in some way. I don't know. You helped me grow up a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was there more than, well, or a dad, I don't know which, but he was definitely there. But I really love the music in that movie, and it's still, and I sadly don't know who the artist is. Obviously, I love How Deep Is Your Love, but
Fifth of Beethoven, Walter Murphy.
No, the one, I can't think of what it's called. Don't worry about it.
Well, I'm gonna look it up now.
I think her name's Yvonne something. I'm not sure what the...
Yvonne Elliman. If I can't have
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, that's the song. If I can't...
I don't want nobody, baby.
You Sorry. Must leave that in. You must leave that in.
No, that is a good song. And for some reason, it even though it's a female singer...
I don't know why.
The high voice made me think of that it was somehow a Bee Gees song. But it's definitely not even remotely a Bee Gees song.
Right, right. But I really... And it's funny, I remember the name Yvonne. See, random pieces in my memory. So it's burnt in there.
Yeah. But so Saturday Night Fever, big deal to you.
Oh,
as a
big,
kid.
Big deal. Important, yeah. Important movie.
Did we go see it at the cemetery? Do you remember? Was that one of the ones?
I don't know.
I mean, in terms of Travolta movies, Carrie was our first date movie at the cemetery. Like, it was an early date. Maybe not our first date, but I feel like it was a pretty early date. Mm-hmm. And so we got some Travolta in there. And that must have been, I mean, I didn't know anything about your Travolta history at that point. And that was an amazing screening, by the way. If you ever have a chance, see Carrie with a crowd, because it's insane. It's insane because it plays more of the comedy that's there, and not in a way that people are above the movie, but there's just a lot of comedy in Brian De Palma movies. I think people don't remember.
Also, horror at different time periods is less scary because we're the audiences of horror now are so, I don't want to say jaded, but I feel like we've gone through a lot.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a more innocent time, and I don't know. Anyway, so Saturday Night Fever, huge deal.
Yes.
Next, we move on to one from 2004. This is directed by Greg Araki, and it is called Mysterious Skin.
Summer, I was 8 years old. 5 hours disappeared from my life. 5 hours gone without a trace.
Are you ready? Here we go.
Tonight on World of Mystery, we investigate the terrifying world of UFOs.
I think I was taken too. I keep a log of all my dreams. Someone else is with me. Another boy.
You're on your way to uncovering the truth. Maybe concentrate on that other boy in your dreams. He could help you find the answers you're looking for.
I know all Neil's secrets. And there's shit there you don't even want to know about, trust me.
I'm looking for an Ann McCormick.
Now, what do you remember about this movie?
Wow. Well, I love... I can't even...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Thank you, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I always put the name in the wrong order, which doesn't make sense, but I really like him. I love his acting, the choices of movies that he's been mm-hmm. in. I find them they're all over, and I really like it. Brick.
Yeah, one of our favorites. Another early date movie for us within the first year. And it was one I remember we saw the trailer, and I can't remember what we would have seen the trailer on, but it would have been in the first year of our dating, and we both were like, ooh, that looks really cool. And then it was one of the rare movies where you see the trailer, you get excited, you go see the movie, and it then becomes one of your favorites. And I think it's still between you. That should have been on this list. Why isn't Brick on this list?
I like Brick. And, well, again, I'm limited to 10 movies. And that's sort of like I can never really say. Like, these are in no apparent order, by the way. No particular order. I'm not like, it's sort of like asking someone what their favorite song is. I can't pick one.
I know.
You can't pick one. So 10 movies. Like, I was thinking about this earlier today, about how if there was one movie or one song or one thing that you had to have on replay forever, what would it be? And I don't think I could have one thing like that. I mean,
that'd be hard.
Yeah. Like, if that was the only movie that you could see ever and it would just be on constant replay. You know, would that thing work for you still?
I don't know. I got pitched to do an episode of another show. I won't spoil, but it basically has to do with picking some favorites. And I was thinking about it in terms of the context of the show. And I was like, I don't know. It is a favorite, but it was like, if I thought about it in the way of I can only watch X, Y, or Z, I don't know if it'd be one. I don't know. I'm just not sure. As much as it is my favorite movie. Anyway, I get it. But yeah, this one, for those that don't know, is about like a teenage hustler and a young man obsessed with alien abductions who sort of cross paths and discover they have these similarities that are unsettling. You really don't need to describe the movie much more than that, I don't think.
No. I mean, I think that would take away from it too. Yeah. And I just remember, again, this is a movie that I haven't seen for a while. I think I've only seen it when I saw it in the theater and maybe one other time possibly.
I just realized we don't have it on Blu-ray, so I ordered the Blu-ray for you.
But for whatever reason, it just stuck with me. And again, I don't know if I should say this or not, but like this list I composed in 2017. So this is a list of movies that, I don't know, at one point, I forget why it came up. And I was like,
I think we're going to do another show like this at some point. I apologize.
No, I don't know if it was that or you had asked me. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to think about
this.
Maybe
it was just that. I was like, write down your favorites right now.
Yeah. And so, and I think I sent you a message like, this is my top 10 in 15 minutes. And, you know, that was like the movies that came to my mind first. And, you know.
I think this is a really cool one. And I think it's one that a lot of people haven't seen and may not have even heard of. But it's sort of a cult type movie, not cult like, you know, Charles Manson, but, you know, movie that has, I think, Greg Araki is that kind of filmmaker. Like, he's makes these niche films, often with a, you know, gay perspective on them, because he is a gay director. But he just makes, like, these really unique and interesting movies with interesting characters. A lot of them more comedic than this one. This is one of the...
This is pretty serious.
Yeah, it's pretty serious, more dramatic than most of his others, but it has this fantastic element to it because of the alien thing that comes in. And I won't go any further than that, but that really makes it distinct and memorable. And I think it's a movie that people aren't really talking about anymore. So I was excited that it was on your list. So that's Mysterious Skin. That is on, I should say Saturday Night Fever is on a Paramount Pictures Blu-ray. Mysterious Skin is on a Strand Releasing Blu-ray. And then next up we have one of your favorite comedies from 1999.
It's funny. I guess it's funny, but I know you always think I have a weird sense of humor. So I guess I don't categorize things as comedy. I think of this as a love story, as a romance.
That's fair. I guess
romantic comedy.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I feel like there's some drama in there too. But yeah,
what's
you're right.
What's it called?
It's called, no, I'm just kidding. It's called 10 Things I Hate About You.
Bianca Stratford is the most popular girl at Padua High.
You're asking me out?
I'm down. I've got the 411, and you are not going out and getting jiggy with some boy. I don't care how dope his ride is.
Her sister, Kat, is something else entirely.
People perceive you as somewhat tempestuous. Heinous witch is the term used most often.
The only thing they have in common...
I am the only girl in school who's not dating.
Oh, no, you're not. Your sister doesn't date.
...is one simple rule.
Okay, you can date. When she does.
But she's a mutant. What if she never dates?
And you'll never date. Oh, I like that.
For Cameron,
no one will go out with her.
It's a problem.
And what about him? I heard he ate a live duck once.
So you two are gonna help me tame the wild beast.
Absolutely.
Touchstone Pictures presents a story for every guy who's ever tried.
You never give up, do you?
Was that a yes?
No.
Well, then was that a no?
No.
Every girl who's ever hoped.
This is not good.
And anyone who's ever been taken completely by surprise.
She kissed me.
Where?
In the car.
10 Things I Hate About You.
And again, there's Shakespeare again, Taming of the Shrew.
You like your
I like my Shakespeare.
Literary adaptations, as it
yes,
were.
I do. Yes, I do. And I'm the weird kid who liked reading Shakespeare in high school. But this is a time when maybe being a movie star mattered, because I liked Julia Stiles a lot. And I saw a lot of Julia Stiles around
Prince
this
and
time.
Me in the theater?
Oh, I saw all sorts of Julia Stiles movies at the time.
Save the Last Dance? Do you see that in the theater?
I think I did see that in the theater.
We should
yes,
show that to
I
Raven.
Did.
I think
we
like
did
it.
Show that to Raven. Maybe
I don't think
we did
yet. If we did, we should show it again, because she's not talking about it, and she should. That's something she would like.
But yeah, but speaking about romantic things, I just love this.
Oh, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Oh my gosh, I forgot. I didn't even mean to pair these back to back. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in this movie.
You paired them back to back?
No, I put them in random order, and Mysterious Skin immediately followed by another Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie. Of course, Heath Ledger being the big headliner in this movie,
an
early role for him.
Yeah. And I just thought it was sweet seeing this person who is sort of gruff and, you know, over it all, you know, well, I don't want to spoil anything.
Doesn't remind me of anybody I know, so I don't know what you're talking about.
I just think that it's very romantic, very beautiful, and it touched home with me. Like, there's certain references to bands in there. I don't know. I guess I can relate to Julia Stiles' character in this film.
I do love that we got...
And I always waited for the Heath Ledger dude when I was in high school, but that never happened.
Yeah, too bad. We got, I don't know what my equivalent is. Not Heath
Ledger. Well, that wasn't in high school.
But I did think it was an interesting sort of, not full circle, but partial circle kind of thing when she showed up in Dexter, which is one of your maybe yes. favorite shows of all time. More serial killer love.
What's going on here?
Anyway... I thought that was super neat because I actually do like her as an actress and I've come around to her much more. This is actually a movie that turned me off of her because I did not care.
You are so wrong.
I like this movie more now than I did initially, but I didn't find her flippant, you know, attitude, baloney, to be appealing at the time. I thought it was, I see why knowing you now and knowing you, you know, the kind of person that you enjoy, I see why you liked her, and I like her more now myself. But at the time, I was like, nope, not really into that. And I'm also, there's this romantic comedy formula that they say, which is, it basically goes, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I love you, which is just sort of a standard thing in romantic comedies. You see the two characters just butt heads, then they double down, they butt heads even more, and they legitimately hate, and this has hate in the title, you know? And then eventually they come around to each other. And I think that that is a common formula. And I think at the time I was, whatever, reacting to that stuff. But I do think it's a good movie now. And I like that it's one of your favorites. Because it's another one that I don't feel like gets talked about very much these days. There are definitely fans of it. But, you know, Heath Ledger, I don't know. He's kind of, since his passing, I feel like some of his legacy is a little bit forgotten.
Well, that's too bad because he's a good actor.
Yeah. No, and he is, outside of his annoyingly curly hair in this movie, he's good. You know, he pulls it off and they are a good match.
And it's very sweet.
Yeah.
Very sweet.
So that is on a Disney Buena Vista Blu-ray. And next up, we have one from Christopher Nolan from 2000.
Huh. I can't remember. Oh, wait. Memento.
Oh, wait. Where am I? Some anonymous motel room.
I guess I've already told you about my condition.
Oh, well, only every time I see you.
It's my memory.
Amnesia?
No. It's different from that. I have no short-term memory. I know who I am. I know all about myself. I just... Since my injury, I can't make new memories. Everything fades. I've told you this before, haven't I?
What's the last thing that you do remember?
My wife.
So, do you remember anything about the first time you saw this one? And what is it about this movie that... I mean, I get why you like it. Again, this is a pretty great film.
Well, I think this is one of the earlier films where I feel that I saw things. I mean, maybe there's stuff before this that I saw that I just didn't hit me as much. That just the order of things, I like how it's not linear. And that I relate, again. I don't think linearly. I tend to tell stories in different orders than they actually happen. And probably I'm doing that right now.
It's so funny. Yeah, you do.
But anyway, so I really appreciate this. I also like writing a lot. That's just something that throughout life I've done. And that comes into play in this. And, you know, photography, all of those things come into play here. But I just like the story. And it's psychological. And I'm really into that. That to me tells a really interesting story. I guess I like stories that aren't, whoops. And I know you're like, 10 things I hate about me. That's pretty straightforward.
No.
But I just feel like I like stories where it's not what you expect is going to happen. And again, I'm that person, sorry folks, that will lean over to you and tell you what's about to happen next in the movie and spoil it for you. I just do that and it's a bad thing. And Brian will sometimes be like, but
she's usually on the mark, occasionally not, but
mostly am. I even call lines sometimes and then they say it.
Yeah. And your daughter has inherited that because Raven's actually really good. And I've said this before on the show.
It's crazy how good she is.
She's actually
scary.
For a 9-year-old, she can. She's been doing that
since she was like 5.
I call it seeing the Matrix, which can tie into this movie in a way, but it's like she starts to be like, okay, it's that kind of story. These are the characters. This piece goes here. And then she can be like, oh, well, it's going to be this and this. It's crazy. And I mean, it certainly is due to having been exposed to a lot of movies.
Heavy movie watching.
From a very young age. I think she was like one and a half when we went to the new Muppet movie.
Oh, I think we showed her like some baby movie. There was some baby movie or something. I forget what it was called. And she was like one, I don't know.
Oh, that baby documentary, maybe?
Yeah, I forget babies. What it was.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, so she's definitely got that quality. But do you remember, I think for me, this was the movie, well, I'd never seen Guy Pearce before, and I like Guy Pearce. And I'm imagining he made a good impression on you in this one.
Yes. No, I liked him.
And then Carrie Ann Moss, who had obviously been in a huge hit the year before with The Matrix, which we just rewatched as a family, by the way, which is intriguing to rewatch it now. I found her incredibly striking in this movie, more than I did in The Matrix, and she definitely caught my attention in that movie. But yeah, this character was an interesting dark turn for her. The whole thing is just so film noir. I think we've watched some film noir, and I think you've responded to a lot of the ones that I've shown you. I think it's kind of one of your genres, really.
Yeah, well,
a lot of that is psychological too.
I've seen film noirs before I met you, Brian.
Obviously. But it's just another, like, the psychological thing is definitely something I've gotten to know over the years, is something you enjoy. And when I see movies with those elements, I can immediately go, yeah, I think she'd be into this. But the same thing goes for the noir darkness that this movie has.
No, for sure.
The fatalism that it has.
Mm-hmm. And Christopher Nolan rocks. Yes, indeed.
Yes, he does. He's pretty great. I just picked up The Prestige on 4K Blu-ray yesterday at Best Buy. And we were having, not an argument, but I know you obviously prefer this film to The Prestige. And
yes.
And you need to rewatch The Prestige. Not saying Memento is better, because I think a lot of people would agree with you that this is his best film. Have you seen Following, by the way?
I was just about to bring that up. After I saw Memento, I had to go back and I had to look up Following. And I loved it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And
debut film.
Yeah, I was very impressed. It's sort of like when you find a band you like and it's their second album and you're like, oh my God, I got to go back and listen to that first one. And sometimes it's a letdown, but I didn't think that it was, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly no slouch. He's made some great movies since then. I think I told you in the car the other day that my experience with this was, I think, similar to yours in that you didn't know anything going in, right?
No. I you know that for me, I prefer to know nothing. And back in the day, I think it was a little easier to know nothing, right? Yeah. Because you didn't have the deluge of, you know, social, even though I'm not on social media, just like everybody talking about things around you, and trailers weren't like a half hour long each and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I knew nothing. And I love that I knew nothing, because And again,
more than me, even, expectations are a killer for you always.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's really hard for me to even suggest a movie sometimes, because in even doing that, I'm setting it up for a fall. I'm putting it in a place that you're like, okay, let's see. And I get it, you know, it really, because once you start to figure out what kind of movie it is and you're like, okay, let's see what this movie has to offer. And then at some point, it's either going to impress you or let you down. And I get it. All right, so that's Memento, another good choice. Next up, we have a more recent film.
Did you see what Blu-ray Memento was on?
Oh, sorry, yes. There is an out-of-print Lionsgate Blu-ray, and there is an in-print Samuel Goldwyn Films Blu-ray. I have the Lionsgate, but I went and looked it up, and I don't think there's too much of a difference between the two. I do know some people were complaining online that special edition DVD, which came in a little like blue cardboard case, I think that had the chronological version of the film. You could watch it chronologically. She made a bad face. Yeah, I agree. I don't know why you would need to do that, but apparently some people want to watch it that way, and they would like to have that feature available. As I understand it, it is not available on either of these Blu-rays, and I could be wrong, but I don't think it's there. I don't think you need it personally.
The whole thing.
Yeah. No. Obviously, a big part of the movie is its structure. And we won't explain it specifically, but it's not linear. So if you haven't seen Memento, definitely go watch Memento. It'll be a nice surprise, I guarantee. Okay, so next up, from 2016, a movie called Arrival.
There are days that define your story beyond your life.
I'm Colonel G.T. Weber, Army Intelligence. Pack your bags.
Like the day they arrived.
War objects have landed around the world.
We need answers as soon as possible, or we could be facing global war.
Oh, my God.
I know why they're here.
This is one of those movies where you're like, oh, I just saw this. Remember, this list is from 2017. And it probably struck a chord with me.
It's a good movie.
No. It's a great movie.
I think it should still be on your list.
No. I mean, I didn't recreate a list since then, so it is technically still on my list. But I feel like whenever Raven sees a new movie, it becomes her favorite movie. But then if you ask her,
Venom might still be her favorite movie. Although she really did like Lego 2. We watched Lego 2. I don't think she would say she liked it more than Venom, though. She really liked Venom.
But the thing is like, then if you ask her a couple weeks later, it's no longer. Like, it's just for that moment. And I get that, because it's hard for me to compare a movie that I just saw with something I haven't seen for a really long time. And I do believe there is life out there. And
yeah, for those who don't know, the movie is sort of about humans communicating with aliens. It's a lot more complex than that. And there's some really great emotional character arcs in the movie that I think are pretty fantastic, actually, and pretty moving. Mm-hmm. But on a basic level, that's what it is. Sorry, you believe that there, and I agree with you. I think it'd be naive to think that we're this isolated.
This whole huge multiverse.
You think about versus. How big the universe is and how tiny, tiny, tiny our sliver of it is.
It'd just be ridiculous to think there's no other life out there, in my mind.
Yes. And again, this has a psychological component as well. So I feel like every movie that I pick, that everything in my top 10, other than maybe 10 Things I Hate About You, even though there's probably something in there too. So anyways, but I really enjoyed this, and I enjoyed the layers, and it's a good movie.
Yeah, no, very good movie. We don't have to spend a ton of time on that, but yeah, it's great. And there is a Paramount Pictures Blu-ray of that one. It is also available in 4K. I think it's the only one of these available in 4K. And that sort of rounds out the Blu-ray portion of your
list.
Favorites. We have four more films here.
And maybe next time that I'm on this show, they will be made into Blu-rays by then.
We'll see. I mean, who knows? I feel like some of these could easily happen. I'm actually really surprised a couple of them haven't happened. But let's start with one.
Okay, we get a little darker.
This is a real favorite for you, and one that I just have not quite connected with personally, but I know a lot of other people like this one too.
It hit a chord again.
You don't have to defend it.
No, I'm not trying to defend it. I'm saying some movies, and I'm sure those of you who listen to Brian's show, some movies, it's just what you're feeling at the moment when you watch it, and it just sort of like boom, and it just like becomes part of you. And for whatever reason, I love May.
You know how when you meet someone and you think you like them, but then the more you talk to them, you see parts you don't like?
Everyone always thought May was different.
Jesus, what are you doing?
Relaxing.
Doesn't it hurt? Ow! You crazy bitch!
But really, she was just misunderstood.
I need a real friend. Someone I can hold. Don't be mad.
Then, one day, May met Adam.
Hello?
The boy I saw today is different.
So what do you do, May?
I work at the animal hospital.
When I left for vacation, my dog had 4 legs. You can't sew it back on, can you?
I could. Some people think it's kind of gross.
I love gross.
Really?
And she thought he liked her just the way she was.
Oh, I'm bleeding.
I know.
Hey, this is weird.
You like weird.
Not that weird.
And as Brian will tell you, it's a 2002 movie, but again,
directed by Lucky McKee.
And again, it kind of goes back to my Hannibal Lecter love, but also the fact that
she feels like Hannibal Lecter's like stepdaughter or something like that.
Well, I mean, I just feel like I can relate to her. Again, I know this sounds terrible, but not that I would do what she does. But again, I get the impetus for it. I feel like I want a friend too, and May finds a way to get a friend. Oh wait, we're gonna hear the tagline. Go ahead.
Tagline: Be careful, she might just take your heart. I don't think I'd ever read that before.
Yeah, well, that's a good tagline.
Yeah, but she, played by Angela Bettis, and it's a great performance. I got to give credit to Angela Bettis. She does a really good job. I think there's certain movies that just really make me anxious, you know, and this had that effect, but she's wonderful in it. And, I forgot, Anna Faris is in the movie, like an early one.
Oh, damn. I forgot.
Right.
That.
An early one for her. And then Jeremy Sisto, I want to say, is the sort of object of her obsession. Jeremy Sisto, who was, people would much more remember circa 2002 when he was still fresh off of 6 Feet Under. He was a big part of that show and has been around, but hasn't. And he, I think he's done a couple other TV shows since then. But for me, I was like, oh, the guy from 6 Feet Under. Anyway, yeah, it's a really interesting character study. I don't know. Do you remember? Was it just the darkness and the sort of
no? I just like the idea. I like, again, the psychological thing, the relationship. There's a mother-daughter kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought it was interesting. Like, I feel like it's almost like a precursor for any kind of doll movies, even a little bit too. And I don't know. I again, some of these movies I haven't seen for a while. They made my list because they impacted me and they just stuck with me.
I think this one would stick in your top movies. Just, I mean, well, having.
Oh no, no, that's not what I mean. I mean, it definitely will be in there. I just can't tell you line for line and point for point. Like, if I were to rewatch each of these movies, you know, like yesterday, or that would be a lot of movies. But if I rewatched all of these movies yesterday and then talked about them, I'm sure I'd have much better things to say about them and much more detailed, nuanced things to say about them.
That I rushed you into this episode, but I was the idea came to me this weekend and I was like, oh, it's Valentine's Day, we got to get this out. So yeah, I apologize.
May is very romantic.
It's so romantic. Okay, speaking of romantic, the next movie was, and I've definitely talked about this on multiple podcasts, I think Pure Cinema. I don't know. It's something that, it's a story that I tell people because it was a big deal at the time, is when you and I first started dating.
Before we were really dating, we were like talking on the phone. I think it was before we might have not even met face to face.
No, yet. In fact, I remember having a three-hour conversation with you on the phone. We met through Match.com.
And back then, Brian was so cute. He didn't have a cell phone. Very cute. I that was very endearing. You brought endearing. Me
into the modern world.
Oh, the end of the end of beauty. No,
right? Now you've got a social media obsessed monster. I'm so sorry. But it's your fault.
It's not my fault.
But anyway, so this movie had come out the year before and for whatever reason had really been special to both of us, and that is The Village. M. Night Shyamalan's movie, The Village.
We may question ourselves at moments such as these. Did we make the right decision to settle here? We are grateful for the time we have been given.
What we seem to have amongst us is a predator of some type.
We do not go into their woods. They do not come to our valley. It is a truce.
This color attracts those we don't speak of. You must bury it.
Creatures have never attacked us without reason.
We do not believe our boundary has been breached.
Which I think is
M. Night, I'm waiting for that next one. I'm waiting for the one that holds up. I'm waiting for you. I believe in you.
She still hasn't seen Glass, and I'm pretty sure that's not going to be the one. And I'm not bagging on Glass. I think Glass is interesting. It didn't fully work for me, but it did remind me of how much I love Unbreakable, and maybe all of us go back and watch Unbreakable.
Yeah, we want. Yeah, we watched
Unbreakable
that.
Should be almost in. I feel like that's pretty high for you, too.
Oh, no, it? I do. But isn't Unbreakable before The Village?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah. But anyway, The Village was one that. And this it's crazy this movie's not on Blu-ray because, or at least I couldn't find it. Maybe I'm missing something. But I remember us talking about a lot of things in that three-hour conversation, but a good portion of it, or at least a section of it, was focused on our mutual affection for this movie and how, at least at that time, it was hated. Like, people, this is...
I don't get that.
People were so mad about the ending and the twist, and I think that was...
How could you be mad? That's brilliance. Brilliance, I tell you.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to go with you on brilliance, but I do think...
It's brilliant.
It doesn't bother me at all now. In fact, I think it's a movie that... I feel like...
I saw it coming, but it was brilliant.
I'm sure you did. I'm glad I didn't see it with you because you would have called it in the theater. But it was one of those things where I think people were starting to get sick of his his shtick. You know, they're like, oh, another twist. And
twists are good. What's wrong with people?
No, I like twists. I do too. I feel like the audience for movies is so sophisticated now that it's harder to surprise people. And especially if you're the guy, the twist guy, then everybody goes into your movie looking for what's the angle here.
Oh, obviously, so they view it. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So then
they go in looking for it.
Yeah, and then you become a one-trick pony and it messes with your mojo, as it were. I mean, obviously The Sixth Sense, I saw that in the theater. And that
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. And it definitely got me at the time. I don't like that movie quite as much now. I think that movie much more relies on the twist.
I remember everybody would go back and had to watch that again so they can see it, knowing what they knew. Well, after.
Especially that dinner scene where you're like, oh, okay, he's just cheating. He's cheating. You know, anyway, I don't want to give that away. But I feel like the dinner scene between he and his
wife. No, I know what you're talking about. I know exactly that.
So I think people were starting to get sick of his baloney, and
I liked it.
I did too. But The Village is one that just took a beating from people, and so at the time we were talking about it, it was definitely something where it was the lesser camp of people that seemed to like it. I feel like people are coming around to it a little bit more now, but I still think it's a great movie with, you know, great performances from William Hurt and from
Jurassic Park lady, right?
Yeah, Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yes.
Joaquin Phoenix is really good in it. Obviously, he's still doing great work.
Yes.
Adrian Brody, Sigourney Weaver, Brendan Gleeson. I mean, this cast is insane.
There was a lot of,
good people, you know? And like I said, Judy Greer, I forgot Judy Greer was in it. And Jesse Eisenberg? Oh my God. There's stuff. We haven't watched this in a couple years and I forgot some of this cast. But anyway, it's a really great cast. I think the premise is fascinating. And
I feel like there's people that have like stolen this idea a little bit too. So people can bag on it all they want, but I feel like people still go back and
steal pieces. It doesn't sound like a bad idea right now to me. It sounds like I would love to sort of go away from, anyway. But yeah, I just remember this was a really special movie to us back then. And that was a neat thing. It was neat to find somebody that had that kind of passion for a movie. And I don't know. I just obviously, I loved your voice. I loved hearing you talk about stuff and talking about a movie I liked really, really got me. That was a big deal, that conversation, that one, before we ever even met. So anyway, that's The Village, which...
Not on Blu-ray.
Not on Blu-ray, as far as I can tell, and definitely worth a rewatch, I think, for some, maybe. The next one is another of favorite for me, too, and I'm shocked that it's not on Blu-ray. It is also from 2004, and that is Primer.
Here's what's going to happen. You're going to stay on the line, and you're not going to interrupt. You're going to speak for any reason. Some of this you know. I'm going to start at the top of the page.
Inside the box, it's like a street. Both ends are cul-de-sac.
They took from their surroundings what was needed and made of it something more.
Primer is amazing, babe.
Yep.
Primer is one of the great, great movies of the last 20 years.
I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say about it because I can't remember what part things are revealed or not revealed, and I don't want to mess it up, but see it. Just watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one.
Maybe you already watched it.
It's the less
maybe
you know,
you watched
the
it in the future, but you watched it.
I mean, I think the basic premise you could give.
No, don't tell them anything.
Just the basic premise is like two guys in their garage, one of them played by writer-director Shane Carruth, basically invent a time machine. And
my son always promised me he would invent one.
He's got to get
He told me that he was going to invent one so I didn't grow old, but unfortunately, it's too late.
It's all right. You look good. It's fine. But yeah, this things get complicated with time machines, and I think that's something that in all the time travel movies, which by the way, time travel movies are some of my favorite movies.
Me too.
Isn't that fun?
Oh yeah.
It's just
because we saw Primer. It was very close in time with that oh my gosh, I always forget what the name of the movie is. It's in Spanish.
Time Crimes.
Time Crimes. And I
still really
right?
like Time
Aren't
Crimes.
They a couple years apart or just a year apart? I feel
They're
like they were
close
in time. And I enjoyed both of them quite a bit.
Looks like that was 2007. So we saw...
But maybe we saw Primer later.
Yeah, we didn't see
we
it
didn't
in
see it in the theater.
I think we must have seen it probably on video around the time we were first getting together, and
yeah.
I remember it making a big impression.
And we saw that close to the time of Time Crimes in 2007. So we probably saw that in 2006, and maybe Time Crimes 2007 in our mind, or in my mind, it meshed as very close together being made. But that would be a great double feature.
It would be, because I feel like, yes, they're both time travel and things that can get complicated with that, but their approach is different, you know? Their approach mm-hmm. is different. And
yeah.
the aesthetic of the films is different.
Oh, like, yeah.
Primer's very down and dirty, low budget, but not in a bad way. It works for the film perfectly.
Right, and it makes sense with the whole title, with the whole... I mean, it's all brilliantly connected. That's good.
Truly one of the great movies. I just absolutely love it. And it's one that I'm still sorting out in my head. And I've read... like, not dissertations, but like, you know, breakdowns of the film. And it's definitely one that's like much talked about, much thought about, you know, more than almost any movie in recent memory, if you really get into it. So that's a really cool choice. I really like that movie a lot. We shouldn't say much more about it probably, but highly recommended.
And in the same year, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, a lot happened in 2004.
In that same year, the last on my list here, but again, not in any particular order, just last that we're going over, one of the non-Blu-ray ones, Three Extremes.
From the minds of three cinematic masters. Comes one singularly terrifying vision of fear. Lionsgate Films dares you to open your eyes, hold your breath, and prepare to go to extremes. Three Extremes.
For a while, when Netflix was still, I mean, I guess they still have things on disc that they send out. But back in the day when we were first dating and Brian had a Netflix account,
where you're going with this.
Oh, yeah, you know where I'm going. And he had a queue, and then he gave me like a helper guest queue or a side second queue.
Yeah.
He and a side queue. And so I went and I researched and I put all these movies that I wanted to see. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm just telling you, I worked really hard to make this list.
I wish I'd
and they were some really great movies in there that I don't remember all of them because it took me a long time to compile this list. And I went through... And for a while, I was really excited by
Japanese horror
and Korean horror as well. And there were some really great movies. And Three Extremes is it's not a trilogy. It's three parts in one. It's three little vignettes or little movies inside of one. And I just something about it's funny. I'm not a big French film person. Oh, don't hiss. But it's not that I don't like any French films. I just don't necessarily understand some French films in the same way. Whereas like Italian films, I get those more.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't really get certain kinds of, you know, maybe it's a cultural thing or something. I don't know. But for whatever reason, I love Asian horror films, especially Japanese and Korean. And there were so many on my list. I really got into them. And Three Extremes was just one that really stood out because I love the fact that it had like these three little movies that, you know,
well,
connected.
You have three directors, Fruit Chan, Takashi Miike, and Park Chan-wook. Miike and Park Chan-wook are, those guys are heavyweights. I mean, those guys have made some great films prior to and after this, you know? So good choice.
Yeah, I just really loved how they set things up. Things are very visceral. And the lighting's really beautiful. It's aesthetically pleasing. Well,
Christopher Doyle shot one of them. Christopher Doyle, who would work with Wong Kar-wai on In the Mood for Love, Chungking Express, Fallen Angels. Yeah, Christopher Doyle is really good.
Yeah.
I just noticed that. I haven't thought about this movie in a long time. Probably since we rented it on Netflix.
Yep.
That time. I remember, was that when we had like the bad projector, like the I feel like we hadn't figured out the projector scenario yet.
Oh, I
we had an old like office projector, like the kind you'd use for like
that your friend that our friend John gave to us to use, and
It was pretty bad. I mean, it wasn't like a widescreen projector. It would project a square block on the screen.
But it was still big. Yeah. So that made it awesome.
We found a way to put it on the wall.
Yeah, we put it on the wall, and then we decided one day, we said, oh my gosh, if we turn the bed around, we can put it on that wall.
Yeah, we found the biggest wall in the room, which we just recently stopped projecting on. We moved our old TV upstairs, which is kind of end of an era in a way. We could always do it again if we wanted. But
it was a lot of upkeep. Yeah, dust is not your friend.
Projectors are tough. I gotta say, those that have been able to use them successfully for years and keep them clean and stuff like that, I admire you, because it's great to have the big screen, but in terms of the projection, but we just had, you know, you gotta replace the bulbs, you gotta
definitely, which are expensive.
Yeah, they're very expensive.
And dust is just, yeah, you have to be so
dust
on top
kind
of that.
Ruined one of our projectors in a way. It got all splotchy in there, and I had it cleaned, and it still didn't. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. Yeah. But that reminds me of this. Yeah. This movie reminds
that
me
that was
of
a different
early,
kind of horror. But Three Extremes. It's a great collection of little horror tales. I don't know, three seems like a small collection, but
Anthology. It's
anthology.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a small one, but it's definitely worth checking out. And
crazy that's not on. I mean, you know what? I didn't look overseas. I'm sure there's an overseas Blu-ray of this, but in terms of domestic, I didn't see anything immediately. Yeah. So I'm sure I'll get some corrections from people, like, oh, that's available here, and I welcome them.
Yay!
If
yes.
any of these are on Blu-ray, ooh, even outside the States,
send
I know I have a lot of
way.
People yeah. that are big non-Region A collectors. Please hit me up on Twitter if you know where I can find some of these on Blu-ray, because I'm definitely interested. Mm-hmm. But at a first cursory glance, they weren't readily available.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is a nice little summation of my wife and her tastes in film.
Be scared. Be very scared. Be afraid.
So thank you so
See,
much.
There's an example of me quoting things wrong.
I don't care.
Was it on purpose or for? Never mind. Now I've got Raven in me. I gotta go.
Yeah, we gotta go. We gotta hang this up because Raven's been
locked in a bedroom with pizza and the TV. Yes, dun, dun, dun. Yes.
So we gotta go.
She'll have a new favorite movie by the time we get out.
Probably. We have to go keep an eye on her. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, babe, for doing this list. It was fun to talk about and to give sort of an insight into the person that I share my life with and the kind of taste.
They're afraid for you now.
I think it's interesting. I think it's just something that's neat to know. I want to know all the people who I'm a big fan of as cinephiles, like who is their spouse or significant other? What are the kind of movies those people are into? I'm just curious, you know?
Challenge for y'all.
So anyway, thank you all for listening. Everybody have a wonderful and Blu-ray filled week. And happy Valentine's Day, if you celebrate such things. Anyway.
Over and out.